here at Western Michigan University, the Bullock Performance Institute series is getting started for the semester. This is a series that is held Wednesday nights during the school year. It features visiting artists, faculty artists, and much more, and also always includes a wonderful introductory element, 1/2 hour before the show, a chance to meet the performers. So the series is kicking off tonight with violinist Megan Crawford. She is a member of the Grand Rapids Symphony, had a long history teaching at Grand Valley State University and Calvin University, and is currently a visiting instructor here at Western Michigan University. I'm really thrilled to talk to you for the first time, Megan, and welcome to Classical WMUK, and we're looking forward to your concert tonight at 7:30.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited as well to share a bunch of music with the Kalamazoo audience. I think it's been over 20 years since I've played a solo recital in Kalamazoo, so it's probably about time, I figure.
Well, you were telling me off the air that a lot of this recital has to do with our current circumstances. You are playing this entirely alone, which seems so fitting.
It really is. After a year and a half of pretty much complete isolation, I found myself with a much lighter symphony load, even though we continued playing all the way through the pandemic. We were doing way fewer concerts and they were streamed. So I ended up with, and they were also shorter concerts than they normally would be. So there wasn't as much music to learn. And I was teaching all via Zoom. And so without driving to Allendale every day, I had so much more time on my hands. And so I was able to really kind of explore music in a way that really for the past 2 decades of being a full-time orchestral musician and running a full-time home studio or teaching full-time at a university, in addition to the symphony job, I really was too busy to spend much time kind of learning new things. So that's kind of what I did to stay sane during the entire lockdown, was just kind of pour myself in to learning new music. Initially, it started with kind of being aware of the social activism going on in our country. And so I decided all of my students at GVSU needed to do a recital featuring only works of Black composers. So I did a lot of research and a lot of learning, and it was just this amazing experience of growth for all of us, because I just decided that really my education was not completely lacking of African-American composers, but certainly not representative in terms of equality at all. Mm-hmm. And so I started investigating, and I used resources. Our friends at the Sphinx Organization in Ann Arbor, mm-hmm. and also Rachel Barton Pines Foundation in Chicago. Both of those, she has a foundation called Music by Black Composers, and that both of those organizations really, really are helping to kind of make all of this music of less of minority composers just more available, and kind of like have a list of things for what instruments and that kind of thing. So I use those resources, and really just there's so much to learn. And so that's how I got through that year of being isolated. And of course I couldn't rehearse with any pianist. So everything is solo violin on this concert.
Well, that actually makes it have a certain appeal. It's quite fitting, as you said, like this year of isolation. And here is the voice of a violinist sharing what she came up with, what you studied, what you cared about, and finally getting to share it in front of people. That's going to be really special.
It really will be. I'm looking forward to having an audience and just feeling that energy and sharing that energy. The live performance is, to people that aren't musicians, I don't know if they necessarily realize not just the audience's side of things, feeling that energy, but from the stage side too, we also feel that shared energy of you know, we're sharing this music that we're really excited about with an audience, and we're just like hoping to give you some kind of inspiration and transport you somewhere through the music. And, you know, not having that playing in front of a screen is nowhere near the same kind of reward.
There is a lot to get to on your program, so we should just go ahead and dive in.
Sure.
You've got a lot of pieces to introduce us to. The one we'll all have heard of before is, this is the first one. You're playing music of Bach. What a nice foundational way to get going.
Yeah, since I'm doing all works of solo violin, I just, I thought about not including the Bach because everything else is really much, much newer. But my teenage kids decided that I needed to include Bach, and actually a lot of the students here are the same age as my 18-year-old and my 21-year-old, and they said, no, you need to play something a little more normal, Mom. So I'm going to start with some Bach, two movements of the third sonata in C major, the Largo and the Allegro assai, which are two really special movements. The Largo is just such a beautiful, intimate, prayerful movement. And then the Allegro assai is one of the fun, more virtuosic movements to play. And it really, those two movements show a lot of how Bach wrote for the solo instrument and how he dealt with separate lines and counterpoint.
The Largo is so cantabile, and the final movement is very rhythmic.
Yeah. So, yeah, after the Bach, we skip right to 2015 with, I'm playing two pieces by Jessie Montgomery, who, she was born in 1981. She's one of the, like, really kind of sought-after composers right now. We're playing one of her pieces on our opening concert with the Grand Rapids Symphony. I played a piece of hers up at Beaver Island, Baroque on Beaver, over the summer. And She's just really becoming super popular, and rightfully so. She's just wonderful. I really love her music. I heard this piece because a student brought it to me and asking to play it on a recital. And I said, well, absolutely, you can play this on your recital, and I'm going to learn it right along with you. And so then I found out she was going to write not just that piece, Rhapsody Number 1, but she's in the process of writing six rhapsodies, which follow the tradition of Bach writing six sonatas or partitas, and also Izai's six sonatas. So the first rhapsody is kind of inspired by the music of Izai, and the second rhapsody, which was premiered in 2020, I think it was streamed because everything was Zoom. So I think it has been premiered live. I saw somebody perform it at Bowdoin, I think, over the summer, this past summer. They had in-person camp this summer there in Maine, and somebody played this on one of the recitals. So this is not the premiere, but maybe it could be the Michigan premiere of Rhapsody Number 2. It was supposed to be premiered, actually, at University of Michigan by Michi Wianco, who is a wonderful violinist and actually was in Aspen at the same time as me when we were students. And so I actually know who Jessie wrote this piece for.
Is it reassuring to know that Jessie Montgomery, who is an alumna of the Sphinx competition, she's a violinist. So is that kind of a reassuring thing, knowing that she knows what she's doing when she puts pen to paper?
I think it is just why I'm so drawn to her music, honestly, because she uses the violin in unique ways, and she knows exactly what it's capable of, and she really kind of stretches it to the maximum. I'm really, really loving her music. Can't wait for her to write the rest of them. I'm going to learn all six. I decided that.
Well, so. Audiences will hear two of the Rhapsodies tonight at 7:30 in the Dalton Center Recital Hall as my guest Megan Crawford presents a recital for the Bullock Performance Institute. And there's a pre-concert chat at 7 p.m. if you care to come a bit early. Just as a little preview, you have found works by women composers here, over half by women composers. And the next one is Lyra Auerbach. And she goes back a little further than Jesse Montgomery.
Yes, I think this piece was written in 2002. But it's entitled Lonely Suite, and in quotations, she calls it a ballet for a lonely violinist. And this is so just incredibly relevant after the year we just had. So the movements, she kind of purposely avoids some of the virtuosic type of writing for violin. And it's just really a journey, this piece. Dancing with Oneself has a little waltz rhythm going through it. It's very... I would say it's very small in its scope. And movement two is boredom, which I'm actually dedicating this movement to my 12-year-old son's idea of practice, where he's kind of mindlessly going through the motions. And she instructs us to play with a dull sound, sadly, and non-vibrato. And I'm like, oh, I've got that. I watched him practice for a year. So 12-year-olds usually don't have the most reliable and meaningful practice sessions, I've noticed, after observing him for a year, when it, normally he would practice when I was at symphony. So I'm like, oh, no. I'm like, goodness. Anyway, so I'm jokingly dedicating that movement to him. Movement three is entitled No Escape, and it is kind of terrifyingly looking at your realization that whatever worries and anxieties you have in your brain, you cannot escape them. They're just there. And it's really, this is the movement where we do get some of the virtuosity that we would have expected that she completely avoids in those first two movements. Then following that is a movement I'm kind of dedicating to my father, who is suffering from dementia, and he lives with us, and he is in home hospice care. It's entitled Imaginary Dialogue, and I know that when she was writing this, she was talking about just kind of self-dialogue, but it's been really interesting, of course sad, but it's been really interesting watching somebody go through dementia because they get stuck in a certain area of their life, and it has nothing to do with what's present at this time. So I've watched as he has kind of childlike asked if we knew where his grandparents were, who, of course, died many, many, many decades ago. And at one point, he asked for the phone and wanted to call because he wanted to make sure his parents knew where he was. These were kind of moments that made my heart just sink and just, oh, okay, that's where he is. He asked, do I have to go to school today? Well, we don't know whether he meant as a child or as a teacher because he was an instrumental music teacher his whole career. So it's really... it's just been really interesting kind of having all this time with my father as he's going through this last chapter of his life and interesting things he says. So movement four is entitled Imaginary Dialogue. So that one I think I'm kind of really playing for my father in that one. Then we go back to kind of the mental health issues many people faced during the pandemic with movement five, which is worrisome thought. And I think all of us can relate to that at this point in time.
Yeah.
And then she finishes movement six with question. And it's it's really kind of funny. It's kind of like Ives or something, like the unanswered question. So it just leaves us hanging in this really weird way. But it's such a neat journey, this piece. And I think it really actually, it kind of shows all these like angles of mental health. And it's an interesting kind of, you know, if we relate it to that, I think it's very, very interesting.
You are hearing from Megan Crawford, who is a visiting instructor at Western Michigan University and will perform a solo recital tonight on the Bullock Performance Institute series. And I just have one quick question about this Lonely Suite by Lyra Auerbach. It's got 6 movements, but how long does it actually take to play?
It's really not very long. 6 movements, but some of them are incredibly short. I think the longest one is 2 minutes. So it's really not, it looks like it's going to take up a huge amount of time, but then it doesn't. It still leaves us lots of room for a few more pieces afterwards. I think I have 4 pieces after that that are all single movement works. But yes, it's really an incredible journey, though, even though it doesn't take up a lot of time. It takes us through really, really different feelings.
The only other thing I feel compelled to say is what I'm hearing from you is that your life as a musician and your life as a person are kind of one and the same.
I think absolutely. And I think I've just been finding that out more and more as I've had time to kind of reexamine the violinist Megan as opposed to the mother Megan. Just with a little bit more time as my youngest is now a tiny bit more independent and now he's off to school all day. I'm finding a little more time to do the things that I want to do and study the things that I want to study.
I can already guess what having 5 kids, how that could be, and what the downside would be to your growth as a musician. But what about the other side? What has this family contributed to you being a better musician?
Well, actually, it's incredible how kind of difficult the journey has been. Our oldest suffers from autism. And she is 21, and she's a wonderful musician, actually. She sings and plays viola, but she's not nearly as independent as we would like her to be as a 21-year-old. So I'm very much still kind of in the thick of it with her. Our 18-year-old has some struggles with depression, and so kind of supporting them through their various challenges has, you know, made me kind of dive into this area of mental health and learn a lot about it. And then just being a parent to young musicians, even though I don't think any of them want to have music necessarily for their career, music is still very much a part of all of their lives. And even this morning, I came out on the sun porch for this phone interview because my son was inside humming. He always has music in his headphones. And I was like, oh, no, it's a radio interview. I can't have you humming in the background. So I had to find a quieter place in my home. But certainly being a parent has made me, I think, a more really understanding teacher and really getting that kids are dealing with so many different issues these days than even when I was growing up.
Yeah. I thought that might be where you would take that question.
Yeah.
Let's get back to the program, which has some more absolute gems on them, most of which I haven't heard. So this is one of those programs where you could hear a lot of new music in one place. And that includes the next piece by Ellen Tafe-Zwillick.
Yes. So she wrote The Fantasy for Solo Violin, as the piece for the compulsory round of the Indianapolis International Violin Competition, which, for people that don't know, that is really like the Olympics of violin. It literally happens every 4 years and never in between, and you get a gold medal if you win, if you're so lucky to be the winner. And you also get the use of the Gingold Strad. So it's just kind of, that was always a dream of mine to go to that competition, and I never quite got there because when I finished grad school, I came to Grand Rapids, got that job so I could start paying off my student loans, which I'm still paying off, by the way, and then got married and had a baby all within like the first year of having that job. So that dream never came to fruition. However, I've decided that I need to learn all of those pieces up for every Indianapolis competition that were written. I've learned some of them already. There's some by William Bolcom. There's some by Ludoslavsky. But this one, I heard somebody play during the lockdown on a streamed concert, and it was Bella Ristova, and it was beautiful. She's a wonderful violinist that I've known of for a long time. And I heard her play this, and I immediately was drawn to it and said, I need this music. I ordered it as soon as she was done playing it.
That's The Fantasy by Ellen Tafe Zwillick. And I love the story behind that, just determined to learn all the competition pieces. It sounds like it's probably really hard to play.
They're always very challenging. I mean, they know that it's for this incredibly, you know, high level achieving violinists. So they don't hold back when they're writing. They use like every technique you can throw in a piece, I think. A lot of the composers. So I've got a long ways to go, but it's really a nice way to kind of just say, okay, well, I never got to go to that competition, but I can still learn these pieces that I would have if I had been part of it.
The next piece is sort of a way of changing your taste, right? This is...
Yes, this one, okay, James Stevenson is a friend, and he's a trumpet player. He's no stranger to West Michigan. He was our composer in residence last year during the lockdown. He arranged music for the Grand Rapids Symphony, special music for Joshua Bell and Larissa, his wife, who's a wonderful soprano. And they performed with us on one of our streamed events in 2020. So, but we've played lots of works of his, and he wrote this piece. It's called Vaccinatude. Anybody that knows what an etude is for an instrumentalist, it's a study, right? A technical study. But this one is just so quirky and funny, and his humor in it is just so wonderful that I decided I had to include this. He writes this for all treble instruments, and he wrote it in 2021 to encourage people to get vaccinated. And a lot of trumpet players were recording themselves playing this and sharing it with their communities. And he said, well, this is for any treble instrument. I said, well, I'm going to play it. I'm going to make my students learn it too. So I decided to do that. And this is just so fun to share. And actually, after the kind of really, really heavy kind of mental health and isolation feelings we had during the Lonely Suite, it's really kind of refreshing to hear this vaccinatude that has some humor to it. At the beginning, he writes with injected optimism, and in the middle, there's this kind of swirly section that's called the Moderna section, and then at the end, it says, the instructions are with renewed vigor. So I really just found such great wit and humor in this piece. And I decided to include it just because it's just a really kind of different feel than any of these other ones.
Megan, this is the first piece that I know of for sure that is clearly a pandemic piece.
It is.
With a great message.
Actually, Jessie Montgomery wrote a different piece that's for violin and piano that I did play that she wrote during the lockdown. It's entitled Peace. And last year I streamed that with, we synced videos with my dear friend Howard Watkins, who is an assistant conductor at the Metropolitan Opera now and a pianist, a vocal coach at Juilliard and Bard College for their vocal departments. But he's just the most wonderful pianist, and I played all of my recitals in college with him. So I said, well, Howard, I heard the Met isn't working right now. Do you have time to play some stuff with me and my students? And so I involved him in that. I was mentioning earlier to you that I had made my students do a concert featuring all Black composers. And so Howard, who happens to be an African-American pianist, that is just the best pianist I just collaborated with him so much. It was just, he was the perfect person to invite to do that project with me.
My guest is Megan Crawford, who is now engaging students here at Western Michigan University. And there are quite a few of them, according to you, Megan. And so who wrote the next piece?
The next piece was written by Megan Ryder. And that is myself before I was married. That was my name. I wrote this piece in 1997 as a graduate school student. And it is A Fantasy for Solo Violin, which is, yes, the same title as Ellen Zwillick's, but oops. I wrote mine first, so I think I'm good, right? 1997 versus 2014. But I love the fantasy idea anyway for solo violin playing. It lends itself to improvisatory qualities, I believe, and I think that's why it's so intriguing to me.
You're putting yourself out there. I don't see how you could put yourself out there any more than playing a solo recital with no accompaniment, and then including
exactly
a piece that you wrote when you were still a student, and boy, having to go back to that and relearn it, look at it again. That's pretty brave. I love that.
It is difficult, and part of the reason I think I mentioned my father was a composition major for his DMA that he was pursuing at University of Michigan, and he never quite finished, but he finished all the coursework. He never got around to finishing his dissertation because at that point I think my sister was born, and then I was, and then he just had a full-time job and a full-time family, and it was crazy. But I always kind of feel bad that he never finished his composition degree. And so I think it was partly that made me kind of want to revisit this. But when I wrote it in 1997, I was very, very unsure of myself. I was so terrified to play it in front of anybody. And so I took it to my father's prior composition teacher that was still living in Ann Arbor at the time, Leslie Bassett. And I wanted him to just kind of go over it. So even though my theory professor at Manhattan School had gone over it, I just wasn't enough for me. I just needed somebody that, you know, I really respected as a composer to kind of look at this and tell me it's not just a pile of garbage. So I don't know whether it really is or he was just being kind. But he gave it his nod, and he suggested one note change, which I did follow through with. And then coming back to it now, it's so wild to see this music that I wrote out in pencil when I was a student. And it was really, really challenging, but part of it is because of my father. Like I said, he's suffering from dementia. He's at the end of his life. He never finished his composition degree. Well, I don't have any degree in composition either. I don't think of myself as a composer. I think of myself as a violinist. But definitely there's a little bit of a nod and a tribute to my father by being brave enough to pull this out while he can still tune in and listen from home.
Wait a sec. You can tune in and listen from home?
Yes, this is a streamed, a live streamed event, and you can purchase tickets online to watch online if you are unable to be here in person. So I'm planning on having that done here at the house, so my mother and my father and the kids that can't stay up late enough to drive to Kalamazoo for an evening concert because they have school the next morning, so that they can watch from home. And hopefully, I think my husband will be joining me.
That's great. That's true. Anybody can tune in that way. The School,
exactly.
School of Music website is wmish.edu/music/events, I think is where you'd find this.
/events, right.
Okay. After all of this, Jesse Montgomery, Ellen Tafe-Swillick, Vaccinatude, your own composition, how in the world are you going to finish this concert?
Well, for my project last year, I found this piece by a friend of mine from college, Daniel Bernard Rumain, who has kind of branded himself DBR, and he has this incredibly cool multi-genre cross every kind of music together and every art form together kind of thing going. It's amazing. He's an educator. He's a professor. He's a composer. He's a violinist. He wrote this piece in 1992, way back when I was actually a college student, an undergraduate student with him at University of Michigan. And it's entitled Filter, which is referring to like the pedals that you would use if you were using electronics in like a high pass filter and these types of things, where it distorts the sound if you're not familiar with what pedals do. And he writes this is in the style of Jimi Hendrix. And I remember as a student being so excited about the work that the Kronos Quartet at the time was doing. Around that time, they had a string quartet arrangement of Jimi Hendrix's Purple Haze.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really quite the classical music nerd. My dad was a jazz saxophonist, so I had some knowledge of jazz, but really, like, rock was out of my league. I did not know anything. In fact, I think I found Jimi Hendrix after Purple Haze. I had heard the quartet version, and then I said, oh, I need to hear what this actually sounded like originally. So I came at it really the opposite of most of my friends that knew Jimi Hendrix and then liked the quartet. But anyway, I just remember thinking, oh my gosh, they sound so amazing. And we all wanted to sound like rock stars. And I just knew I wasn't that cool. I couldn't sound like a rock star. But Daniel Bernard Rumain wrote this piece. And I was not brave enough to play this as a student. But now I really I feel like I don't have anything to hide. And I'm mature enough now to kind of be at peace with who I am and who I was back then. And I really do feel like a rock star when I play this piece, honestly. It's so much fun. It's crazy tiring, and it's the last piece on the program because I think when I finish this piece, I can't play anything else.
Megan, I feel like I've caught an artist right at a special time in her life when sharing this music is coming together for all the right and important reasons, and I hope you have a wonderful concert tonight, and rock on.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I really am looking forward to it. So grateful for this opportunity. And I'm really honored to be part of the faculty at Western again.